You're listening to Minding the Brain with Dr. Kim Hellemans and Dr. Jim Davies. Episode 96, Metacognition.
Hello, today we are happy to have Brendan Conway Smith, who is a PhD candidate in our department here at Carleton University in Cognitive Science. Brendan and I have known each other for several years, and he is an expert on metacognition. I've got my ideas of what metacognition is, but Brendan, why don't you tell our audience what it is?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Great to be here. I understand that metacognition is something of a nebulous term, but it is one of those fancy scientific words we use for something we can do every day. So basically, it means steering your own mind. And we all know what it's like to steer our focus towards a task, to try to control our attention in a beneficial way, to try to control some emotion, to harness our motivation, or to think more clearly. So we do this all the time. And so whenever we're trying to control some mental action, that's metacognition. And it's a crucial part of attaining any sort of happiness or fulfillment in life. And that's why I think it's important.
Right. So like meta is sort of means like above or...
Yeah, it comes from the Greek word meaning beyond. And our mental actions can be directed towards the external world, or they can be directed towards themselves. And so the meta part comes in when we're directing our mental process towards our own inner states. So that means controlling our attention, our emotion, thinking clearly. And so the problem is we don't really have a great understanding of how it works. We know it's important. We just don't know the underlying mechanisms of how it works. And so that's where my work focuses.
Yeah, I like to describe it as thinking about your own mind and its states and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So you say we know it's important. Why don't you tell us a bit about that? Why is it? How do we know it's important, and why is it important?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we know it's important because when people are low in metacognitive skills, we know they don't learn as well. We know they can be captive to emotional and attentional issues. We know they can be sort of run around by their thoughts and be consumed by rumination that's unhelpful. And we have connected it to worse learning outcomes. And so there's a lot of great scientific data that teaching children metacognitive skills improves their performance and learning outcomes. We know that it's one of the first things we teach in cognitive behavior therapy, how to help people engage with their own minds and thinking in a helpful way. And so we know in so many different areas it's useful, and becoming more skillful is really crucial to helping you get the best out of your own mental processes. But it's the underlying components we don't understand. How do we get better at it? And that's why that's one area I think is fascinating.
Yeah, you talk about it as a skill, and that's not something I'm really used to thinking about. When we think of skills, we think of something like playing piano or something, as you get better at it, you practice deliberately, you improve over time. Is that the way it is with metacognition? Is it a skill that can be learned, or is it just something everybody does naturally equally well?
It's absolutely that way. So this is one of the hot button issues that we've been talking about. We know that there are decades and decades of research on how people get better at motor skills. Like, we see all these Olympic athletes doing incredible things. We know, as you said, people can get better at piano, and they just practice it and they get more skillful and they get into these flow states, and it's really admirable. Now, when it comes to cognitive activities like chess or math, same thing. We know people can get better at it if they practice. They can become these skilled chess experts or math athletes what have you. And we also know that when it comes to metacognitive skill, the sort of top layer, people can get better in the same way. People can improve at directing their own minds beneficially. People can get better at attentional control. People can become more skilled at attentional and emotional control. People can become better at critical thinking. And so all these different areas we see show the same attributes of motor and cognitive skills. So it seems to belong to the same family.
Maybe the science doesn't have an answer for this yet, but I'm thinking about deliberative practice. So just like not all practice is equal, right? So some practices, you're just doing the same things over and over again. You're not really challenging yourself. Has anyone looked into like the best ways to improve your skill at metacognition? As opposed to just more and more?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that in all these different subcategories of metacognition, deliberate practice allows you to improve at that subdomain. So, but again, just focusing on attention doesn't necessarily help you improve your emotion. These skills can transfer, but you need to really practice one thing in one area. And by practicing one thing over and over, now you become more flexible at it. And then you can actually take it into, more complex environments. So if you were to focus on attention just by yourself, focusing on the breath, focusing on some object or target of focus, initially, you just start very simply just focusing on that target, and you'd build up automatized behaviors in that particular field. And then eventually you can then take that out into the world. You can go into noisy environments, and you can become more attentionally focused. You can practice sort of more out in the wild, or just learning emotional control. You can learn maybe to control some feeling frustration yourself. And when you become more skillful, well, then maybe you can go into the world. You can take these emotional control skills and move into more noisy environments, family dinners or business meetings that can be a little challenging. So that's a form of deliberate practice that we can start with.
So there are people saying that people today, especially young people, are more anxious or depressed. Is that true? And is there a relationship between these trends and a lack of metacognition, or maybe if metacognition has some sort of hope for alleviating some of these problems?
Yeah, this is a huge issue these days. We know, and Jonathan Haidt in particular has done a lot of research on seeing this correlation between a surge in youth mental health problems, depression, anxiety, and the increase in social media, the increase in tech adoption. And just overall, worldwide, there has been over the last few decades this huge surge in mental health problems. And it seems to correlate with this increasing, overwhelming world of distraction and compulsive activities and easy entertainment. And metacognition is one of those fields that are becoming more and more useful these days, because it seems to help give this antidote to this world of attention, distraction, and information overload. So people are becoming more and more interested in how they can rein in their distractions, how they can overcome a lot of the emotional compulsions that they feel towards entertainment and mental junk food. And so people are becoming more concerned with controlling their mind in a beneficial way to overcome a lot of these attentional issues that we're seeing now.
Yeah, some people talk about a cognition crisis. What does that mean?
The cognition crisis is a term that was coined by Adam Ghazali, and he was talking about this this idea of ancient brains in a high-tech world, where our minds evolved for a very different environment. So the human brain evolved to be in a more low-stimulation environment, to be more surrounded by people in a tribe in sort of a natural environment where we weren't overwhelmed by information and attentional distractions all the time. And so this idea of Stone Age brains in a high-tech world really seems to capture the modern ethos of what's going on. And people are sort of noticing that they are in this whirlwind of attentional issues, or people are in this whirlwind of entertainment and information overload and smartphone pings, and there's all these things hacking their attention, and our poor little primate brains don't really know how to deal with it. And so we're sort of noticing that metacognition is important. Metacognitive skillfulness is essential for helping to deal with this cognition crisis.
Yeah, and media has been around for hundreds of years, but I think it's kind of different now, because although people were always trying to make books and movies that would capture our attention, the short form video content that people are now consuming is, we just get so much real time. The companies get so much real time data on how long they're watching and which videos we can so much more specifically engineer a viewing experience to tailor it to a particular person, that our Stone Age brains are really, we have very little resistance to it. I think that's part of why, it's becoming a bit of a problem, over and above the kind of media that we're a little bit more used to. So tell me a little, people talk about, I got a friend who like bricks his phone. He's got this device where when he goes to work, he just taps it on this this brick, and when he goes to work, he can't access anything but like the phone and text messages. And he comes, he has to go home and hit it on the brick again to be able to access any of these time wasters. People talk about that. They talk about willpower, but what's the metacognitive skill lens through which people might be able to deal with their doom scrolling and their overuse of social media and short form video watching?
Right. Yeah, that's a crucial idea, especially these days where people are sort of noticing that they can't control themselves in the moment. You know, we don't have ultimate willpower all the time. So a lot of the strategies people are engaging with these days has to do with saving themselves in the future when their willpower fails, sort of looking ahead of the curve and noticing that, you know, metacognition is largely about also knowing your own weaknesses. And so if you know that you might lose your reason or willpower or your best intentions might fail you in the future, you can save yourself in the future by sort of controlling your environment now. So this idea of bricking your phone or using these distraction blocker apps or these internet, you know, blockers these days are crucial because people are realizing that the automatic pleasure seeking of their brain is so powerful that it can overwhelm people's willpower. And you can save yourself from these instances by sort of functioning your environment for productivity. And I've noticed this myself, and I use a lot of these attention blockers and distraction blockers myself.
Oh, yeah.
And oh yeah, no, it's huge. I don't know what I would have done without these.
I just want to just point this out, everybody, because here we have an expert on metacognition who, you know, if he gets sucked into these things, you can forgive yourself for also being victim to it. They're very powerful.
Oh, it's extremely powerful. It's one of the reasons why a lot of us don't buy junk food. We know we're going to eat it. And so the only way to save ourselves from eating the whole bag of chips is to not buy that bag of chips. And a lot of the times, the only way to not doom scroll is to stop yourself from being able to open the app at all. So I think we do this all the time. We save ourselves from our brain's automatic pleasure seeking. And we know that we can't do that in the moment. So we can sort of save ourselves in the future by controlling our environment in the past. And so this is one crucial way metacognition can be useful these days.
Okay, great. So let's talk about mindfulness. I've been reading a lot about that, and it seems like metacognition is an aspect of mindfulness. Do you want to talk about your views on that?
Yeah. So metacognition, as I've said, really has to do with any deliberate mental action you're going about, whether you're, again, controlling all these different areas, attention, emotional control, thinking clearly, thinking rationally, even memory skills. Mindfulness is a subcategory of metacognition because it really has to do with directing your attention in a certain way. So meta has to do with making your thoughts or the contents of your mind the object of your attention. And mindfulness is really this process par excellence in terms of directing your attention deliberately towards the content of your own mind. So we can have all types of things enter our awareness, thoughts, ruminations, emotional compulsions, worry, all types of things. And by making those the object of focus themselves, we can sort of take away their power to control us automatically. So people will often have thoughts that occur in their mind, worry, rumination, emotional, psychological compulsions. And by making those the object of focus, they lose their ability to control you. They lose their ability to compel you to do the things that maybe you don't want to do. And so you, by making your thoughts the object of focus, your emotions, the content of your awareness, to become more mindful of what's going on in your own head, so to speak, you get the subject-object gap between your thoughts and you. It's the difference between being in a movie theater and being in the movie versus decentering, disengaging and knowing that you're in a movie theater. You're not, you know, what you're seeing isn't real necessarily, and this gap, this distancing, this decentering is really a extremely healthy and beneficial thing that we can learn to do.
So in mindfulness meditation, often people talk about something that's called an anchor. And this anchor might be your breath, but sometimes it's something external like the sound in the room or something like that. And it seems like paying really close attention to sound in the room is not thinking about your own thoughts. It is thinking about the external world. So what is this? Does that have anything to do with metacognition, or is this a different kind of mindfulness that's not metacognition?
Sure. It's one subcategory of mindfulness, I'd say. So you have metacognition as the broad category. Mindfulness is a subcategory, and this modality of attention direction is a subcategory of that. So you can, as you said, direct your attention towards a sight, a sound, the breath itself. And what's interesting about this is it's not about the object itself. It's about the metacognitive skills you build around that. Because whenever you're focused on something, you'll notice that you'll have thoughts trying to intrude. You'll have emotions trying to intrude. You want to just get up out of your chair. And so learning how to stop intrusive thoughts, learning how to harness your willpower to direct your focus towards a single point of focus and keep it there is really this incredible skill that we don't get a lot of chances to learn. Our minds will be moving from one object of focus to the other, sort of like a bouncing ball moving around the room. But learning how to fixate it on one point is a skill that can then transfer to directing it towards anything. You'll just notice that if you build up focus skills on one area, you can then transfer them towards something even more productive, towards a task, towards engaging in a conversation, building a better relationship, towards work, towards anything. And so that's what's so useful about it.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. If I could try to paraphrase, it's not so much that the content of your thought is about your own thoughts. It's more about the very act of directing your thoughts deliberately towards something is being metacognitive.
That's right. Yeah. It's about building the skill of harnessing your mind deliberately. Instead of being run around by your thoughts and your emotions, you take the wheel and direct it where you believe it's most beneficial for it to go.
Okay. So I've heard other ways like people deal with intrusive thoughts or sadness or whatever is kind of changing the narrative or cognitive reframing. That sounds like it might have something to do with metacognition. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So cognitive reframing is a really useful metacognitive skill that people are doing more research in. So James Gross of Stanford University has done a lot of research in this, where cognitive reframing or reappraisal has to do with changing the meaning of your experience, putting a different mental frame around it, if you will. So, for example, a lot of times when we're feeling stress, we will see that signal of stress as a negative feeling, as a negative experience. And so we'll try to steer our minds away from it or procrastinate. So if we change the meaning of stress to perhaps even a positive emotion, the idea that maybe this stress is good for you, that it can become useful in building inner mental skills and in terms of becoming more productive or becoming more than we would have been otherwise, by changing the meaning to a positive signal, we can engage with it more directly. We can sort of rise to the occasion. And so it's sort of like if you were to reframe the pain you experience when working out from a negative signal to a positive signal, you then see it as a signal of growth. You see it as something you are becoming more as a result of. And that's one way cognitive reappraisal can be useful.
That's cool. That reminds me of some of the stuff I know from the imagination world. They did a study where people have like a pain in their arm and you ask them to imagine that they had got the pain in their arm by taking a wound to defend somebody, and it made the pain more tolerable and almost something they were proud of. The extreme version is like childbirth is one of the most painful things a person can experience, but it's also so meaningful that the suffering is way less, right? So
that's right.
It's really cool how we can like do these different mental.
It can make all the difference.
Just try to suffer less.
Absolutely. So basically, how you see what you're experiencing can make all the difference. And people often will automatically perceive things in a way that is not necessarily beneficial to them. They will have intrusive thoughts and they'll think, I need to engage with these intrusive thoughts. They're important. But mindfulness helps you to detach from them and say, well, not necessarily. And so you can have a negative experience like stress, and automatically you might inherently think, oh, this stress is bad for me. But metacognition can allow you to detach from it and say, well, not necessarily. Actually, this could be very useful. And in metacognitive therapy, one of the things people learn is to take an extra step back and to engage with this thing called metacognitive beliefs, where you realize that how you see the content of your own mind can make a huge difference. So people will automatically think that my rumination is important. I need to worry. It keeps me on track with what's going wrong in my life. But metacognitive therapy will help you see that actually it's not necessarily good for you to ruminate. Your worry is not necessarily good for you to engage with. You can change your mind in a beneficial way. You're not fixed to these mental habits that are painful or distracting or disruptive. So learning how to engage with your own mind beneficially can make all the difference with whether you survive and thrive.
I saw some really funny metacognitive advice on the internet recently. It said, instead of thinking of my intrusive thoughts as things to worry about, I think of them as poetry ideas.
That's great. Slam poetry ideas. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. So, all right. So if people would like to learn a little bit more about metacognition, what would you recommend?
If people want to learn more about metacognition, I would recommend that first they identify the area which they think is most useful to them. So whether it's decreasing their emotional suffering or decreasing intrusive thoughts or focusing their attention or thinking more clearly, even learning performance outcomes if you're in education. You would identify the field itself, and then maybe you'd move in that direction because it's kind of an overwhelming area. You know, take it from me. I'm still getting a handle on it. And if you wanted to learn more, I might suggest that the risk of being self-promotional, that you could go to my website, my YouTube channel, MetaThink, or you would, Google Scholar is also a great place to start with metacognitive skill learning, just learning about the literature itself. But something a little more approachable might just be maybe downloading a meditation app or, learning to start journaling where you make your thoughts explicit, so it doesn't necessarily mean mindfulness itself. It means sort of any habit by which you engage in self-reflective behavior is really important. And so you would sort of identify where you feel you need the most practice or the most benefit, and you go from there.
Great. Okay. So you can see links to these things on our show notes and at brendanconwaysmith.com. Brendan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Minding the Brain is gratefully sponsored by Carleton University's Faculty of Science and Gravity for tirelessly keeping our microphones and guests grounded during every episode. If you find this show valuable and you want to support Minding the Brain, consider leaving us a review or rating on your podcast app of choice. Leaving a review or rating increases our visibility and helps new listeners discover the show. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram at Minding the Brain, and you can find us on YouTube at Minding the Brain Podcast. You can also find more episodes and show notes at our website, mindingthebrainpodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Minding the Brain.